Welcome to another edition of the Minnesota Beercast with me, Drew, your co-host, and my other co-host, Schmitty.
Hey, hey.
How you doing?
Good, man.
We are recording this week in the bowels of the State Theater. Well, that's where we are.
I have to say bowels.
It's not so smelly, really.
I know. It's the cleanest bowels I've ever been in.
Clean.
By far.
Yeah, well,
I had a lot of bowels.
Had a colonic earlier today.
And I can talk about the bowels, yeah.
And those are the voices of the Hanson brothers who are here in town for a concert. And you might be wondering why are the Hanson brothers on the Minnesota Beercast? What does Hanson have to do with beer? You guys are prolific beer makers.
Yeah. We are. Yeah, yeah. Well, and beer lovers. So we have a small beer company in Oklahoma and going at it since 2014. And just a passion for the story and the beer and everything about it.
So tell us the story of your beer company. Kind of give us the 101 of Hanson and beer and how everything kind of came to be.
Well, I mean, Taze, Zach, and I, we've been, you know, in a band for the last 25 years, been touring heavily for the last 20, and then I'd say right around, in particular, sometime around 2003, 2004, as you started getting more and more growth in the craft beer scene, we found ourselves in a new way really appreciating beer. Because it was one of those things where it's like, well, when you're only used to the big three, you're just like, no, I'm not so interested. But as you start to get exposed to some of this local stuff, like, for example, one of our techs was a big-time home brewer and beer nerd, and he was always going like, oh, guys, you got to try this and you got to try that. And we found ourselves kind of going like, wow, this is stuff I would have never had before.
The other thing I would say about it is we made a pretty clear call to really established our own independence as artists and on the music side, and taking that on was an amazing education just for forging new paths. And so, just being an entrepreneur, you know, and building stuff. And so, as we began to, you continue to travel the world and develop flavor. I love to cook. I mean, just like think about, you know, just flavors and stories and cities, and everywhere you're at, they've got a different thing.
Sure.
And it just, we just kind of began falling in love with just the whole craft world, because it's really, there's such a symbiotic connection between, you know, what we've spent our lives doing, creating art, because there's so much passion in beer, there's so much creativity, there's a little bit of like rabble rouser, like push the edges, but it's at the same time, it's not about being, it's not douchey, you know, it's like, pretty much most people that are into beer that love, and there's a mutual respect, there's a like, wow, how'd you do that, how'd you create it,
but a pretty friendly environment in most cases.
So we begin, I don't know, it's just multifaceted. I mean, it's like a lot of things, sometimes there's like this really clear line in the sand, it's like, and then this happened, but it evolved, and around 2011 we began really thinking about, what if we really dig it into producing beer, sharing beer, you know, and essentially to start to get our hands dirty, learn from people that we respected that really knew what they were doing. And before we knew it, it was 2013, and we were sitting around going, yeah, let's do this. Let's produce a beer. Let's start a brand. Let's actually turn our idea of what a good beer is into something that other we can share with other people. And we don't want to white label, like, we don't want to just like, you think that somebody else is just gonna, we're gonna stick our name on something. We want to do this like we do any business, which is from the ground up, and that's part of the joy of it, is creating it.
You know? The what I love about the beer world is kind of what you mentioned. There's an intersection between like art and science there.
Oh my gosh, I mean, yeah.
There's a technical, scientific, proper way to go about creating beer.
Yep.
But any craft brewer, you know, you don't get to that point of being in a brewery, running a brewery, making your own beer, unless you've got a passion for the art side of it as well, and being creative within the confines of, you know, those technical limitations.
Yeah, and I also love, like, I just think there's such an identity crisis in our country as far as people being like not sure where they stand and like what's, and beer, like, it's like it's a complete equalizer. It's like more American than apple pie. Like,
yeah.
It's, I mean, obviously it's originally not American, but we've made it ours culturally. Absolutely. for a long time. And
that's
I think
we do with all the best things.
You know,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Beer,
yeah.
Pizza,
it's like,
you know.
Pizza.
There was
good.
Italian food, and then we made it better. Damn it!
Olive Garden.
Yeah.
Wait.
I mean,
that
sorry.
Was not what I meant.
Back up.
Yeah, breadsticks and salad and breadsticks. But I hate to get existential about it, but that's the way I see it. Like, I see, on the other hand, it is also really, like, so hands-on. And, you know, I mean, there's just nothing like a brew day, you know, like going in there and you're like, just like the way we would make, you know, walk into a room and be like, there's a guitar and that there's going to be a song at the end of the day. You know, you go in there, you grab some grain, you got some yeast, you got a, you know, all this mess of stuff. And you know,
and you got an idea going in. But you don't know exactly how it's going to turn out, but you got a pretty good idea.
Even if you know,
but
technically.
You never know, you might get something a little bit off on one of those days, and then you, either a happy accident or a very unfortunate brew day.
We've had, you know, stuff explode. We've had, you know, whole shipments of cans, you know, go bad. I mean, things that happen on production side, but, yeah. You know, we even, you know, you have stuff that, like, happy accidents sometimes where, you know, we had a amber ale that we didn't have the right hops for, and went ahead and tried and adjusted the recipe and went, you know, this will work. Slightly different hop combination, was supposed to break down, produce the same results, but gave us this much brighter, much louder hop continue, which is, you know, natural.
Tasted more like an IPA than amber ale.
Yeah, and so I mean, that kind of, all of a sudden we're like, we called it the Ampaler.
Yeah.
You know, you know? And so I think, and you know, it's hard when you're trying to build, a business, you know, you do sort of have to, you need to be able to replicate stuff, you know, so you can, people, I like that, I want it again.
You want results, you know, that are repeatable.
Yeah, like you want to be able to be like, get back to that, but at the same time, they're, I feel like, much like having a good fan base of something, of some kind of art, like once you have a connection, people will go with you.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
They'll be like,
absolutely.
That's weird. You know, it's like, we made a really bad beer. You should try it. Like, okay. You're like, you're right. It's horrible. Get me another one.
You mentioned the connection. You mentioned, you know, having the fan base. That is another aspect of the entire craft beer industry that is really kind of wonderful in that, you know, you get these tap rooms that start up and they build a following, a connection with the immediate community that they're serving. And then to watch them, you know, some of them grow from there, but some of them don't. And that's okay because they're serving a definite need within that community.
Yeah, and some of them, that's the whole dreams. Like, I want to be the corner bar that is like Cheers, you know, that makes their own beer.
Yeah, I mean, it's like,
you
know,
it's like the actual
brewery.
Guy.
I mean, I think about, there's a brewery that finally opened their doors sometime earlier this year, the Renaissance folks over there.
Yep.
And I mean, their vision, their goal, I mean, I'm sure they...
This is a Tulsa brewery.
Beyond this, but their primary goal was, look, we just want to be the neighborhood brewery. They're actually, it's relatively residential around where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just like, you know, we just want to be the place where people come in and have lunch or have dinner, you know, and go back home. Like, just in right in the neighborhood, just down there. Their goal, you know, the way they kind of announced it was just to kind of be that, be that company, be that brewery. And I love that. You don't have to try and be, you know, some national brand necessarily. You might just want to have an effect on people.
Right, exactly. We are up against a break. Let's take a quick break. We're talking with the Hansen brothers. We've got Taylor and Isaac. No, Zach.
Zach, you know, what can
we
say?
We didn't want to talk to him anyway.
He's seeing drummers.
Nobody wants to talk to drummers.
I mean, what does he know about beer?
He likes to talk about video games.
Yeah.
We'll get into a little bit more of your beers and your tour and your music and all that. Coming back on the other side, you're listening to the Minnesota Beercast presented by our friends over at Freehouse Beer.
Rosie here. I want to take a minute to brag about my friends at Blue Plate. November 5th through the 15th, they are participating in Eat to the Max, their 10-day version of Give to the Max, benefiting nonprofit People Serving People, a local organization dedicated to ending homelessness. Consider visiting their restaurants November 5th through the 15th and to make a donation, which Steph Schimp and the great folks at Blue Plate will match, up to $10,000. Blue Plate restaurants have raised over $75,000 for People Serving People. Stop by one of their 8 restaurants and eat to the max.
Ooh.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Beercast, presented by Free House Beer. We are, as I mentioned, in the bowels of the State Theater in beautiful downtown Minneapolis.
Yeah, don't just. Stop.
What's wrong with that?
Stop. We're in the basement.
There might be people listening.
Yeah, we're in the basement.
Sensitive stomachs.
It's a family-friendly show.
My son, my oldest son Everett, said whenever I say certain words like that, he will look at me and go, "Dad, seriously,
right?"
Especially like when we're about to have lunch or something. I mean, if I ever say
that's
anything,
my
like
job.
That,
you're not supposed to critique me. Thank you, son, father.
Right, like moist.
Yeah.
Can you say moist?
Yeah.
Well, these bowels are not moist. Well, they're just, very dry bowels in the state.
We were just in Kentucky.
It's getting worse.
We were just in Kentucky, and I was just, and they kept talking about, like, you know, this is a dry county, but now it used to be dry, but now it's moist.
And then we have
and hopefully one day will be a wet county. I'm like, you know what? If you took that out of context, guys, I just think you should stop saying the word moist and wet.
Different adjectives.
You know, we're talking about a weather situation or, you know, you and your lady friend. So.
Yeah, in a long walk on the beach, one day maybe. Yes. You know.
Exactly. It was a wet county.
Those are the voices of the Hansen brothers who have been kind enough to give us some time before their show here.
Thanks for pointing that out right after I said all that.
We've been having lots of fun. We opened a couple cans of Dangerous Man Crawlers. Mm. What are we drinking?
Let's see right now. Let's see, which one is this? We got the Imperial Pumpkin Ale that we're drinking right now.
I have to give the shout out to the chocolate stout.
Yeah,
chocolate milk stout.
Chocolate milk stout. Oh my
delicious.
God.
Yeah, friend of the show, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien brought those over. So
Jeff.
Thank you very much, Jeff, for keeping the show hydrated.
Well, I'm really grateful because moist. We can't really.
It's very moist. I would say, moist. Yeah, keeping it moist. Keeping it moist.
But
you guys should just claim that one. Minnesota Beer Podcast, keeping it moist.
You guys kind of mentioned when we talked about the beginnings of your beer company. You know, you were exploring the idea and talking about some trusted leadership, kind of giving you guys some guidance in the beginning of the company. Do you want to give some credit? Who kind of helped you along the way when you're looking for some inspiration, some guidance?
Well, totally. I mean, a couple guys. I mean, one of the right as we were establishing our sort of downtown, moving our studio and things down to downtown Tulsa, which is kind of going through a bit of a revival. A lot of downtowns, this is happening in the country. One of the first real kind of new wave of craft breweries was opening up in Tulsa. It's called Marshall, and they're super great brewery. Brother and son and dad. And families involved as well, and just an awesome. Trained in Germany, did the whole deal, and so when we were first contemplating him, I mean, he was one of the first guys we went to, and was huge asset. You know, Eric Marshall, awesome guy.
Also, they're, been really helpful in getting some of these laws changed.
Yeah, he's one of the guys who's been an advocate too, and even when we were just even thinking about. Just early stages, just like, man, what would this look like? And how crazy is this to think that we would be able to do it? And then he introduced us to one of the first brewers that we really sort of just like said, fill us with knowledge that, you know, Gary Shellman, who is a longtime home brewer in Oklahoma City. And, you know, it's just like every day you're learning. You just like flood of knowledge, like fire hose to the face. And, you know, those... I think,
and Gary was really helpful in helping us develop the Umhops recipe, for example.
Yeah, he is the Umhops recipe was, which is kind of the, you know, started off as a joke name. We're like, no, seriously, actually, that's so bad, it's really good.
It's kind of like the elephant in the room.
You know, and it's a good beer name, and you're like, wait, you guys made, oh my God. But so that beer.
It's one way to
I
say
I do love that beer name. That is a fantastic.
Yeah, Umhops. Umhops. it's like Homer Simpson. But it is that beer. I mean, we wanted to start off by having a beer that was like the thing that you just reach for, right? Mm-hmm. Like the way Sierra Nevada was, you know, for so many people, or for like Anchor Steam, or these like icon beers. And it's obviously really fun to do crazy, bizarro things, you know. But just to have that like essential flavor, and there's so many IPAs, you know, and I love IPAs, and you know, super West Coasty, you know, Pliny the Elders, and like, you know, there's a pine tree in my mouth kind of beers, but. Delicious pine trees in your mouth. But
You got to be careful.
Moist pine trees.
Saying that, but also a good beer name.
Yeah, yeah, moist pine trees. Yeah, pine tree in your mouth. But just to, so Mops is more of a little more of an English style pale. So it's not an IPA. It's just a pale, and it has a little more of a malty, you know, kind of body to it, and it's nice and smooth and caramelly, and then you still get that nice hoppy. I love how people will be like, I don't really like hoppy beers, but I like your beer. I'm like, just a second. You like hoppy beers.
Right.
Yeah. You just haven't had the right one.
Don't like all hoppy.
It's like saying you don't like rock bands and then being like, but AC/DC's awesome.
Right.
You just don't like all rock bands.
Yeah.
Some do it differently or better or whatever.
No, that's an accurate statement. It's really fun to talk to people about what they do and what they don't like about beer. And I think, you know, a lot of it is just people thinking what they do and what they don't like and not knowing what their palate is accustomed to.
Totally,
knowing what there is out there to
enjoy.
Well,
and also your palate changes over time, too. That's absolutely one of the other things, too. You know, like, I mean, there were
slash periods. It dies.
Yeah. But, I mean, there were periods where I couldn't get a hoppy enough beer. And then there have been periods where I'm just like, you know what I'd really like? It's like a really nice, even, like maybe, you know, like a lager or like a or an amber ale or something that's just more mellow.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of go through phases in your kind of beer appreciation life. Mm-hmm. You know,
and even sometimes it changes with the year or the time of day.
Yeah, like 8 a.m. I want a Scotch barrel aged imperial stout.
Exactly.
It's 8 p.m. I just want a nice light Pilsner. You know?
Exactly. I've dialed it back a little bit.
Dialed it back a little. Kind of start big and goes work your way down.
Exactly.
The one I started with was 10%.
Yeah, it's 9 a.m. somewhere.
Don't judge me.
You mentioned in the last segment when you were contemplating this idea where you're kicking it around, you said something to the effect of you wanted to bring your idea of what good beer was to the people. So talk a little bit about what that is. What is your idea of what makes a good beer, and what was one of the first beers that you were really eager to brew and present?
Yeah. It's a good question. I mean, the one thing I'll say is it's been quoted in many different ways, but paraphrase is sort of, there's nothing new in beer, right? There's no secrets, right? There's the ingredients. Everybody knows what's in it somewhere. Yeah. And so I don't think we had any delusions of like, we're going to come and create this completely other thing that nobody's ever made. I mean, to be honest, maybe that sound like a downer, but it was more about this is what I would drink. This is what I would want to have. And honestly, it's about
like music in a lot of ways. It's a little bit like, you know, you write a song that you feel really good about, that you're proud of. Somebody else might have written a song in the key of G that was kind of groovy like that or whatever, but you know, you're like, well, no, but this is my version.
Make music that you want to listen to.
Yeah.
You make beer that you want to drink.
I do think that there's a definitely need those of making things that are not, I don't know, not trend, totally trend driven, and just in general, because, I mean, obviously people want to make things that people most will continue to like, but it's not, I mean, just like there's a sense of like making something that is good, not just because it's, you know, popular to try that particular out there thing. And I always think about a combination of the whole experience, you know, the meal you're having, the food you're having, you know, who you're sharing it with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we wanted to start with more of a traditional pale ale instead of a crazy hoppy, you know, IPA, was because it's like, no, this is actually the beer that I would like share with you and you and you.
For example, Omops goes really great with one of my favorite foods, curry.
So, yeah. And then style-wise, I mean, I think just it's more about having the freedom to share something that you love and that connects with people in such a different way and part of their life, you know, like what you do after the, you know, after the day's hard, you know, run, you know, like meeting up with friends and sharing a great beer. And so interest in, I personally love strong beers and heavy beers. I love stouts and, you know, porters. Like, we did a porter collaboration with some the guys at Dead Armadillo, where we've done a lot of brewing with them, and it's called name. Yeah, Dead Armadillo. Yeah, well, there's a lot of armadillo. There's a lot of Dead Armadillos in Oklahoma.
Logo is an upside down.
But we have an in, we have the furthest inland port in America in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So we, like, through all these locks, like, you can bring barges all the way from the ocean to Oklahoma, to Tulsa. It's called the Port of Catoosa, and so, you know, the idea was to call the beer the Inland Porter, and yeah, you know, it, obviously that's kind of a kitschy fun name, but it was like, porters, I feel like, don't get, we were saying, they don't get as much love as stouts. And you've got, stouts are kind of the rock star of dark beer, and so you know, a,
but it's just, to me, stout porter,
a drinkable porter that is more you know, more like a Baltic style, that is super smooth and drinkable, and but has that roasty goodness that comes with porter. So it doesn't, like, you're not like having a meal just because you're drinking a dark beer.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that fully answers the question, but there's tons of brewers are doing insanely innovative things, and I kind of think that we will, as we become, we admire and appreciate, like, we're going to see our friends at the guys at Distill that are just insane sour great
masters,
sour masters, and you know, as we, you know, step into, it's like, if I think we can do that and execute that as well as the things we love, we'll chase that down.
But, you guys got time to stick around for one more quick segment, or do you, I know you got sound checks and everything coming up.
Sure.
Let's take a quick break. We'll knock out one more segment. We'll be right back. This is the Minnesota Beer Cast, presented by Freehouse Beer. Welcome back. Minnesota Beer Cast, recording from the State Theater. I'll leave out the bowels part, and everybody gets all touchy about that. I've picked that up. We are here with the
but
band.
But you've gone with it every time, which is kind of great.
You've said bowels.
People get very touchy about the bowels,
too. Every break.
Yes. I know. I'm going to say it again, too. I was just kidding about that.
Well, I'm just really glad that this is a moist county. Wait, I mean.
We are here with the band Hanson.
Is that a pot reading your mouth, Taylor, you're excited to see me.
Taylor and Isaac, who are here for a concert tonight, and we're talking about your beer. We haven't talked much about your music, and we haven't talked much about this tour, so I do want to give you guys, well, I want to give you the opportunity, if you want to, whatever you want to plug, man, this is your time.
I mean, we can talk about music. I mean, we've been just like we were talking about with beer, I think you have to just make things that you're proud of, because being able to sleep at night is really, like, that's something you
kind
can't.
Kind of important.
You can't. Well, but I mean, seriously.
There's really no other greater measure of success, right?
Dude, I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Going home. I love the quote, you know, the happiest people in the world go home smelling like high heaven. It's like, you know, hey, man, it doesn't matter what you're doing as long as you're happy doing it.
So I think that's really our metric of doing things that you are proud of, and that, you know, if nobody buys it or if everybody buys it, you're still proud of it. And you're asking me about
authenticity.
Yeah, you're asking me about beer, and like, to be, you know, to be able to say, like, well, you know, we don't necessarily know if we're going to do something no one's ever done in beer, but maybe you'll do it slightly different with the right story, with the right message, with the right, you know, exact execution, and then that becomes a bunch of people's favorite beer, you know. And just like Anchor Steam wasn't the first time that anybody had, I mean, they weren't changing the world. They were going back to some traditional styles and craft, and became an icon of American brewing, craft brewing in this country, you know. So, so I think
for the longest time, I didn't even realize that they were just called Anchor.
Yeah, because you just Anchor Steam.
Anchor Steam.
Because Anchor Steam was the beer. Yeah,
Steam was the one.
Right now, we're doing something. I mean, just talking about authenticity, we're doing a really cool deal, which is a whole tour with symphonies. And we've been a band since we were kids. You know, we started writing songs and touring when we were really young. First major tour we did, I was 14 years old. I'm 35, so been at it for a long time. And we had a bucket list, you know, of things, you know, and for years we thought, symphony, what would that be like? And
yeah, so, like, as a songwriter on some level or another, you're always like, the symphony. Like, yeah. There's a certain scale and this emotional depth and dynamic depth that exists within that. If nothing else, it's because you're used to hearing it in movies constantly. So you're like, oh, you're writing the movie in your head as the songwriter.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's like, ooh, wine barrel aged saison. One day. So we'll
12-year aged stout in whiskey barrel.
Yeah. So I mean, these kids gotta have goals. So we worked on a project with so this is a 90-minute show. It has some the songs. There's some songs from our catalog. There's some brand new songs. We composed all of that, and then pulled in an arranger on the symphony side and worked with him. He's an Academy Award-winning arranger named David Campbell, who, if you don't know his stuff, you should just Google him, and he's been involved in so many amazing projects, kind of known for working between sort of contemporary music and classical. And
he's kind of that bridge between the pop world and the classical.
Yeah, and we've known him for a long time. And
he actually did the arrangements on our very first record, Middle of Nowhere, which was really cool.
So we put together this whole show. And so what we're doing is we have the charts, we have the entire show. I mean, it is like you got to hit your marks, right? Where you're in a band, so you know each other, and we're generally pretty on point with arrangement, but still, like, you're playing with 50 other musicians that are reading charts. You got to really step
that's
your game
a little
up.
Different than just the three of you guys who've been playing together for 25 years. Right?
Yeah,
you got 50 other people.
This isn't freeform jazz.
No.
There's no going off script.
You cannot play a Jazz Odyssey in front of an orchestra.
You can, but they won't.
Yeah, exactly. You can.
They'll just look at
you. Yeah.
Like, that's not on the chart.
it's really cool though. And one of the things that's interesting about this show is that. It is actually kind of built around the lyrics of the show, because we couldn't to figure out what we weren't going to include was one of the hardest things, because you have all this music and we say, hey, we're going to pull from all of our catalog and then we're going to write some other songs as well, and you just kind of get paralyzed because there's so many possibilities at that point.
We basically kind of went like through three different iterations of, okay, well, there's all the songs that have had orchestration on them, and then there's all the songs that we think, you know, are kind of core Hanson material. And we kind of went through two different versions of that and just went, wait a second, that's not quite...
The only way to really...
That's not quite right. Neither one of those quite hit the mark. And so we finally kind of realized that we had to basically storyboard it and kind of almost create a certain script for ourselves.
That's pretty
that
cool.
That guided the songs along the way, because it just became really difficult.
Yeah, it's a little theatrical. I mean, it's we most of our tours, every single night's different. I mean, it's like we know we have fans that will follow 5 or 10 shows, and so we're always changing stuff out. But in this case, it's like, no, this is the show. But the show also has a very distinct arc to it. So it's really kind of, you know, it's a story about kind of reaching for the crazy dream and the coming up against issues and facing challenges, and then ultimately sort of tries to leave people with this sense of, like, look, you know, from our point of view, the journey is the destination. Like, the struggle and the pain and, you know, all the stuff you come up against, you know, if you're going to go for anything, if you're going to live life well, you're going to have, that's going to come with it. So you almost have to celebrate the adversity a little bit, you know, because it's, if you think you're going to get through and do anything worthwhile without some pain, you got another thing coming.
It's coming home at the end of the night smelling like high heaven.
Yeah, you're going to go to somebody's bowels, you know.
It's going to be moist in there. You're not going to know what to do. You're like, why am I here?
Thank you for bringing it back to bowels.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Has this been the most, I guess, challenging or rewarding tour that you guys have been on?
No, but it's been the most times that I've said moist in there.
And
it's,
bells.
It's been really, it has been honestly really rewarding. The first few shows, I think we were all, I mean, genuinely, like, we couldn't get through the first few songs without, like, tearing up, because you turn around and you're like, wow, how did this get pulled off? You know, we played with the National Symphony outside of D.C. We played with the Symphony in L.A. at the Greek Theater, you know, the Pittsburgh Symphony, I mean, Denver, I mean, and just as a music nerd, I mean, we've been playing music since I was 7 years old. We learned to, you know, read music.
Yeah.
And so just to turn around and have the sort of respect of conductors and players that are exceptional, that are playing your music with you. You know, they're like, okay, our job is to do this together. That's really cool.
Well, I think the other thing that has been really important for us in this show, and luckily a lot of the players have mentioned this, which has been like a sign of success for me personally, and I think for all of us, is that, you know, our goal was to make sure that it was fun for the people that we were playing with.
It's not just whitewashed string.
That it was, that it wasn't just, that it was in some way or another, that it was challenging enough. You know, that it was interesting enough, you know, and we've had a lot of the players who have played with us come up and say, you know what, we've done this with other bands, but this show is not just about us like holding like big notes across, you know, a chordal progression and, you know, and finishing up a song, you know, and making it sound pretty. You guys are actually giving us moments where it's literally just the orchestra, where moments where it's all about what they're capable of doing that we could never do. And that's the really important thing, I think, for us in this show, is making sure that it's interesting in that way. Because, hey, man, we may never do this again.
Right.
I don't know. And so you better make it count.
You might as well take a break in the middle of the show and let them do some work.
Exactly. For God's sake.
You guys are all here. Go take it.
And also the other thing, too, for me is you were talking about songs that choke you up. I mean, the first song, Reaching for the Sky, has gotten me like on the edge of losing my composure many, many shows in a row. And actually, interestingly enough, too, the song Umbop in specific, too, has all, like, it's taken on a whole new place, because it's our most well-known song by, you know, the broadest group of people.
Most well-known and most misunderstood.
Yes, exactly. But what's cool about that song, too, is that we were able to take it into a slightly more melancholy place, which I think appropriately brings out the lyric as well in those verses. And it feels really fun and really bittersweet in a great way.
That's really cool.
For me, personally.
I think we're almost out of time. You guys have been more than gracious with your time. Do you want to clear up the misconception about Mbop real quick before we we call it a day?
The misconception about Mbop is it's actually a song about... No, I don't know.
No, Mbop's is already... I mean, I was joking, especially
combating
understood.
Global terrorism.
As a joke, yeah. No, I mean, well, it is... I
wasn't sure how dark...
No. I mean, for one, Mbop has inspired Mhops, which is the best thing about Mbop. But that's the clarifier. Like, this song grew up into a beer.
That is also...
delicious.
Like, my favorite thing about Mhops is also that every friend that I ever let try it...
They're like, this is great. This is strong.
Exactly.
It's 7.5%, so it'll kick you
in
the butt.
Like, I had two friends in the last week and a half when that were like, dude, what the heck? I'm not normally this drunk off of one beer. I'm like, I know.
It's because you're not drinking a Dos Equis, dumbass, man. but I will just say one thing about that is that I think that when we talk about the misconception of that song, the real thing about that song is it was a song that was written by guys that listened to doo-wop and rock and roll music. And the story in the song is really, you know, about kind of the melancholy of realizing that stuff comes and goes, and, you know, you hold on to a few things that really count in the end. And the funny thing about it became a hit.
Kind of struggling with that in our own lives in a way.
Yeah, and it's obviously super upbeat and very bright and shiny on the record that came out. But where it started was sort of a campfire song, and that's how we played in this show. And so what's cool about it, for all the songs and many dimensions that people, you know, the fans really know about who we are as a band, that song still stands up because it's, at the core of it, a good song with a good melody and a few nice changes should last, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing, I mean, that's really the same thing we're saying about beer. You know, if it's got core attributes that are authentically good, it may not be the most popular thing at that moment in time, but it's still going to be a good quality deal that you want to go back to.
Maybe most importantly, we can go home and sleep at night about what that
is. Yeah, because we drank it all.
No, but I mean, it's something we're extremely proud of. Yeah. You know, it's one of many that we're proud of. So.
Well, thank you guys so much, man. This was fantastic. This was a wonderful conversation. Congratulations not only on the success of this tour, but on the success of your brewery.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I look forward to hopefully seeing you guys here available in Minnesota someday.
Awesome.
But for any listeners out there, you find yourself in the Tulsa, Oklahoma area, tell them where to find you. Tell them
You can go to handsbrothersbeer.com, and we're about to, you know, time to do a whole kind of reworking of the site, talking about all the changes so people know they can get it in a lot of grocery and convenience stores. If they're in Oklahoma, that didn't used to be the case, so that's kind of cool. And really pushing towards cans, so seeing, you know, new cans going out, which is kind of a different deal.
We have the Ohm Hops and the Saison.
Those are our two kind of mainstays that you really find consistently. So
fantastic.
Thank you so much, guys. Have a great show tonight.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, guys.
Cheers. All right. We'll be right back. This is the Minnesota Beercast presented by
Rosie here. I want to take a minute to brag about my friends at Blue Plate. November 5th through the 15th, they are participating in Eat to the Max, their 10-day version of Give to the Max, benefiting nonprofit People Serving People, a local organization dedicated to ending homelessness. Consider visiting their restaurants November 5th through the 15th and make a donation, which Steph Schimpf and the great folks at Blue Plate will match, up to $10,000. Blue Plate restaurants have raised over $75,000 for People Serving People. Stop by one of their 8 restaurants and eat to the max.
Welcome back. Final segment of this week's Minnesota Beer Cast. I want to really thank the guys from Hanson again. They were very generous with their time. We're still in the bowels of the State Theater with lawyer extraordinaire, friend of the show, Jeff O'Brien. How you doing?
It's good to be here.
Thank you for you are the conduit that helped set this up. Tell me a little bit about that relationship of how you were able to sort of set this up with the band Hanson.
Is my mic on now?
Yep.
Okay. It happened very organically representing them, and I just do their liquor stuff, so distribution deals and regulatory stuff. And one of their many team of lawyers, I should say. But when I was a different firm, a former colleague that knew them from his entertainment practice, and they had toured with one of his clients, and so they. This is when I was doing, everybody knew I did the brewery stuff, and he said, could you help him out? And it's been, worked with him ever since. It's just, if things come up, we deal with it. So it's nice to, we've talked for a long time about whether or not we could get him here to do something. And lo and behold, they were doing a tour. They were coming through here, and we made sure that we could get him in front of you guys to talk to him.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. They're just really neat guys.
Yeah, they're very down to earth.
Yeah. I guess that's what happens when you come from Oklahoma. You don't meet too many pretentious guys from Oklahoma, whether they're as talented as the guys in Hanson are or not.
Well, and it's a good example. We've talked about, I think years ago, we talked about their beer on the show, about that at that time they were doing a contract brewing deal.
Yeah.
And this was the idea. They wanted to, they had a recipe. They wanted to build it out. They went with an established brand in terms of the bop to the hops, which actually works really well. I agree with them. And I've had it, and it to me, it drinks more like, it drinks more like an IPA. It's just below the, the IBU content to be judged on an IPA, but it does drink. It's got that kind of. I agree with the guys. It is got a little. It's got a good hoppy taste. So it's not. It's a little bit hoppier than your typical pale ale. So,
what is it like to kind of be the lawyer extraordinaire for some of these celebrities and craft brewery startups? Is it difficult to be the lawyer for these guys with stars in your eyes as they call you up? But Jeff, this is Hanson on the phone. We want to start a brewery.
Well, you never with these guys. You never get to deal with. I've had like one or two phone calls, conference calls with them. Most of the time, dealing with their business people that are kind of helping them out on this too. But yeah, you deal with. I've worked. Besides the beer stuff, I work with a lot of retired and current athletes. So, that's the thing is you at the end of the day, it's fun to work with high profile celebrity clients, but you are their lawyer, and so that means you have to think of things differently. And I always joke about how lawyers have this dark view of humanity, and we have to do it with everybody. We have to think of, it's just when it gets down to negotiating things, it's just another deal, and you just have to do it the way you always do it.
Yeah, you got to be professional.
Right, exactly.
See, I just put kind of your autograph.
Well, I always manage to get a certain amount of stuff signed. Just to, it's what's fun is for for any kind of client, it's fun to go. I always put stuff up in my office. We jokingly refer to it as the Ego Museum because of the signed jerseys and the growlers. And I have my empty can of Modest Dilly Dilly and stuff like that. So all the collector items. And people just like sometimes just going up and seeing some of the stuff. And the people in the firm get a kick out of it that it's all in there. And it's funny, you get like one of my athlete guys will come through. It's like, well, where's my photo? I'm like, well, here, sign this and I'll put it on the wall.
We only have a few minutes left, and I want to make sure we have some time for this. You were mentioning during the break there is a Supreme Court case. There's a case in front of the Supreme Court that
yes.
has some implications on the craft beer world.
Yes. The U.S. Supreme Court granted cert, or certiorari, so that, when you go to the U.S. Supreme Court, you want to appeal, you have to petition the court, and they get to choose which cases they want to take. And they took a case. It's an appeal of the Tennessee Retailers Association. This is a case out of Tennessee where the challenge is to a state law that prohibits, I should say not prohibits, there's a requirement that in order to get a retail or wholesale license in the state of Tennessee, you have to have resided, you have to be an individual or entity that's resided in the state for a certain period of time. This is significant because what it's calling out is this dormant commerce clause. Can you make laws in one state that benefit, you know, the businesses in your state that are so blatant, you know, explicitly in favor of an in-state business versus somebody else outstate? There's been the number of these small brewer exemptions that have been passed over the last few years where they've been exemptions for small breweries from the franchise laws. Many of them have been written and only applying to in-state breweries, and there have been other lawyers that have brought this up, that this is a potential dormant commerce clause issue, and it'll be interesting to see if where the court lands on this, how many other similar laws are challenged.
So Jeff, is the idea, explain this maybe for myself, the layman out there, where if they're writing these laws in Tennessee that you have to have resided in Tennessee for such and such a time to hold this license, that negatively impacts folks who maybe reside in another state, right? So the idea being that they're writing laws that are solely beneficial for the citizens of Tennessee when we belong to a greater union, right, being United States, so that's a discriminatory law. Is that a correct interpretation?
Yeah, it looks at, you know, there's lots of different forms of discriminatory laws, and when what the court's likely going to look at is what the interest is of the state in having that restriction, and if the interest of the state, you know, is greater than the interest of the public at large, then, you know, and this is coming out of, as you guys remember from a few years ago here in Minnesota, with fights with Total Wine. Total Wine is involved with this, so this is part of, you know, Total Wine can't get a retail license in Tennessee, and so, as you know, that changes the scope of competition when a big box liquor retailer comes in like that. So it's very similar to some of the issues that we've seen fought in Minnesota versus in-state versus out-of-state, and of course all the special interests and making sure that their ox isn't gored. And so this is going to go up to the U.S. Supreme Court rarely takes a case regarding beer, so we'll see what happens.
We were talking with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. We only got about a minute left. Where can people, you are a lawyer to the stars and a lawyer to many, many of the fantastic craft beer aficionados and purveyors here in the state of Minnesota. If people want to learn more about you,
yep.
You have got contact information, anything you want to give
out? Yeah, you can reach me. The law firm's name is Chestnut Cam Brown. You can find me on jeffreyobrien.today, jeffreyobrienesq.com, which is my website devoted just to the craft beverage legal area. So I got all my clients on there and some different laws and articles and a lot of links to my previous appearances on this podcast. So, but yeah, find me on Twitter at Jeff O'Brien. I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. Yeah, look me up. And love always working with these kinds of clients, whether they're famous or not. We try to do things so that they become famous for the right reasons.
Yeah, and you've been a fantastic resource to some of my favorite breweries. You were knee deep in the modest dilly dilly kerfuffle.
Yeah, I just like to say for the record again, they didn't call me first. I never said they could do it.
Thank you so much for not only setting up this interview with Hanson, but for sharing all your expertise with us on the show so frequently. We really appreciate it.
It's and bringing fun. The beer today.
Yeah. How do you pick amongst all your clients when you're meeting with your celebrity brewery client, which one you give them? I'm like, well, nobody's going to object to Dangerous Man because you can't get him anyplace else. So why not welcome him to Minneapolis with some Dangerous Man?
That was a wise choice.
All right.
That'll wrap up this week's edition of the Minnesota Beercast presented by Freehouse Beer. We will be back next week with a brand new episode. Have a wonderful few days, and check us out at MinnesotaBeercast.com or follow us on the iHeartRadio app. Cheers.
See ya.
Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. Unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.